Hey, citizens of the interweb, you have landed on A Shot and a Beer, a weekly interview podcast featuring chefs, brewers, troublemakers, and heartbreakers. Every week, we're talking food and booze with people who do it for a living. So grab a beer, pour yourself a shot, and come along for the ride. Shot and a Beer. We are at episode number one. We are drinking today with two of my really good friends and guys that I just got done doing a culinary dinner with from Cardenas Snack Shack and the burgeoning empire that it is becoming, Chef Hannes Cavan.
Thank you.
And from Waypoint Public, another good friend of mine, Rich Sweeney. How are you doing, Rich?
Oh, I'm great.
You forgot to mention a Top Chef contestant.
Oh, and former Top Chef contestant.
Blah, blah. Blah, blah. That was so many years ago, it doesn't count anymore.
notice the pretty one wants to bring up TV automatically. Guys, I am thrilled to have you guys here. We just got done doing a Serious Food and Silliness dinner here at the Madhouse Comedy Club, which is where we are broadcasting from the beautiful Cone of Silence studios.
I feel like there should be a logo with you with one of those giant dog cones around your head, right? In a corner somewhere. Like, that needs to be made.
What'd you guys think of the dinner last night?
I thought it was fun, other than parts of my dish not coming together.
I can't believe that your ice cream melted.
The ice cream melted and the white chocolate balloons wouldn't pop.
Wouldn't pop.
But the flavor still came together. I like the can that she had, that ISIS can in there.
That she just ended up whipping the crap out of that ice cream. Right. So it worked out well. At the end of the day, it came out well. I was just crapping a brick, sitting in the freezer, peeling white chocolate off of balloons, going, what the hell did I sign up to do?
Right? Luckily, it was garnish.
Yeah. He's just here to look pretty.
For those of you who don't follow me on social media, and that's...
Wait, there are people who don't follow me?
Yeah, no, that's We're actually confused. Most everybody. We had a six-course dinner paired with Stone Brewing last night, and these two guys participated in that with three other very, very talented chefs, Ami Cisneros, Rosanna Peyron, and Anthony Sensei, who really, and everybody really pulled out a lot of... Yes, Matt?
Carl just said pulled out.
You're tapping on the table, and that's crazy.
You could hear that?
I could hear that very clearly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime movement on the table.
Don't get excited.
Oh, shit.
The fourth member of our team is our engineer, the currently annoying Matt. But thank you.
Who just lost a shift.
I will not tap the table from now on. So before we really get into this, why don't we go a little history with both of you guys? Give me a rundown on where you came from, how you got to your current stations. Hannes, why don't we start with you?
All right. Well, I am naturally crazy. No. I was born here in San Diego. Got interested in cooking in high school because I hung out with hungry kids. We'll say, just say that. And I learned how to cook for my friends and decided to make a career of it. Went to culinary school on the East Coast at New England Culinary Institute. Came back.
That's Vermont, right?
Vermont, yeah. So being from California, or San Diego in particular, that was definitely a shocker. But it was needed to focus on school.
Sure.
And it really has worked out for the best. And then I came back to San Diego because why would I not? And I really lucked out and had some really great jobs with really great owners and really great chefs. So I was been able to come up quickly and come up with people that are in this industry still today, you know, and that's something that I know a lot of us see is people that start out and change careers. And
sure.
The culinary career is definitely you have to be a little mental, I think, and, you know, it fit for me. So I got, I had the right thing and worked for enough people that gave me the confidence to do my own thing. And since 22 years of working for other people, I jumped ship and, you know, with my wife, Sarah, we opened up Carnitas Snack Shack in North Park. And now we're on our 7 weeks out from opening our third location. Yow.
Yeah, you guys opened up to just a huge success just from the get-go.
Yeah, well, I think it's because of the 22 years of being in town. Not to brag, 2009, I won Chef of the Year from the California Restaurant Association.
You were at Kensington Grill, right?
Yeah. You know, shout out to Tracy, you know, love you. And had a great time. And, you know, was able to meet people like you, like Carl, you know, Rich, that really supported what we do. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you're down, you need your friends that are still doing it to keep you up.
Right.
And, also people out there. We've done a lot of charity, obviously. Yeah. That's how we've gotten to know each other, I think, even more.
Right.
Is through our charitable events. And because I think the prior charity, it really helped people to understand who I was and helped me to open that restaurant with that success.
Right.
And
right.
let's face it. You know your way around a pig.
Yeah.
And your restaurant's name is Carnitas. Everybody knows they're going to get some damn good pork right. when they come to see you. So...
True.
It's just truth in advertising in the name alone.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I worked fine dining. I mean, kind of like you guys.
Well, you actually spent a couple seasons out on Nantucket, didn't you?
Yeah, that was kind of a really great learning experience.
Oh, I can imagine.
You know, an American chef that spoke French and beat you down like a French chef. So, you know, it was good for me. It definitely.
Was that right out of school?
Right out of school, yeah. You know, I teared a lot inside because you weren't allowed to show emotion in his kitchen. You know, if you burned yourself and you cried, you know, you pretty much got fired. So,
right.
You know, you just held it inside, and I guess that's what made me this way. No. It's about what you do and the passion, you know, and I got lucky that I love to cook and people love to eat my food, and being able to take, I think, gourmet cuisine and put it into sandwich form,
mm-hmm.
you know, and make it so everyone understands it, you know. And we work these fine dining restaurants, you know, it's $30 plus entrees.
Right.
It's hard for a lot of people and the general public to come there and try it without really knowing what they want. But to be able to put it in the sandwich form or in a smaller version,
sure.
as we did at Carnitas Snack Shack, it allows that everyone can come try. Everyone's willing to spend $8 to $10 to experiment.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't even really want to experiment at $30, you know, but being in the industry, I take that chance. But if you're, you know, the average consumer or diner, mm-hmm. you know, it's tough to spend $30 on an entree and then realize you don't like it. You know, that could have been three nights of eating at Carnitas Snack Shack.
Right. Well, you know what I really liked about, have always liked about your place is that you don't cut corners. You know, you could be buying already shredded pork. There's some really nice product available, but you don't.
True.
You could be buying already cured pork belly, but you don't. You're doing all the, while it's a quick service concept, a lot of these dishes take 3 days to make. And yeah. people don't see that.
True.
But you're willing to do it.
Correct. And I think that's what's kept us growing. And, you know, thanks to the powers that be that I have the third one coming.
Right.
You know, and that's really what hopefully people understand as it is. It's, you know, this isn't money coming from, you know, my family. You know, this
right.
is hard work, you know, and sacrificing and, you know, giving up some of my control to have the financial stability of an investor and
right.
opening multiple units. And luckily I found one that gets what we're doing, you know, and the goal isn't to change it. The goal is to improve it.
Well, the one thing that I think that really unites the three of us is that even though this is a young man's game, and even though we are, there's a little gray and all the beards are sitting around this table, the three of us still like to cook. We haven't moved beyond the just, you know, wandering around the dining room saying, you know, hello to our diners. We're actually in there sweating and getting dirty.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, I think there's a reason why we're not out in the public.
Even the pretty one stays in back.
Right, exactly.
Did you now, see how I showed up yesterday?
I saw how you showed up yesterday. And Rich, I met you when you had your own restaurant, Our Gang, up in North Park.
Hillcrest, yeah.
Hillcrest. And where did you get your start? Where did you come from to before you did that?
So I grew up a restaurant brat. My dad was a general manager, and my mom, my stepdad, had a bagel business and catering company. And I grew up hating this business and swearing it off, saying I would never, ever, 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 ever be involved in it, seeing the amount of work that my parents put into it. And then found myself living in New York City after growing up on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
The accent comes out if I drink enough. And And I found myself in New York City and started waiting tables, knowing that was the best way to start making some cash. And started doing that, and everybody kind of saw that I had a natural progression towards running restaurants. You know, it was just it went right. from being a new server to, you know, lead server quickly and moving up and all that stuff. And I moved out to San Diego probably about 11 and a half years ago now, mm-hmm. and had, again, still kind of sworn it off. I was like, I'll just come out here for the winter. I'm going to be a little bartender and have some fun. And came out here and fell in love with San Diego. Never looked back.
And, so you actually came to the kitchen from the front of the house.
Yeah, I was one of those reverse. Like, most people start in the back and they realize, hey, there's really good money to be made in the front.
Right.
And they jump ship. And I realized, as much as I love people, I hate people.
Mm-hmm.
And
amen.
And I really love cooking. And that was always my go-to. And it took me running a restaurant in Pacific Beach and getting into it with two of my cooks who decided they were going to tell me how we were going to do things. And I told them, well, there's the door. And they walked out in the middle of lunch, and I jumped on the line and cooked by myself. And when I had the conversation with the owners, it was a husband and wife, and she was a chef, and he was more of the business side. Technically, mm-hmm. I worked for him. And she supported it, and he was absolutely against it. And I gave him my notice. And then 2 days later, signed up for culinary school out here because I grew up in it. So I knew how to do a lot, but I knew right. there was a lot of stuff I didn't know.
Right.
And so I went to school at San Diego Culinary Institute in La Mesa. To fill in the blanks. And I was really fortunate that I got I was the first class for a new program that they were rolling out where the head of the school was actually our instructor. And he was Larry Lewis was an amazing chef to have.
I remember that time.
He was just incredible to learn from. But one of the really kind of mixed blessing cool things was as head of the school rolling out a brand new program in the process of accreditation and all that, he would be in, do our lecture and our demo, and then give us our assignments for the day. And then he would have to go and do other stuff. And so in a 5-person class, because we were tiny, 5-person class, I started kind of taking the lead. And so I would be the one like dishing out, you have to do this, you do this. That's where I jokingly told
him.
Were
you the only one in the class that really had restaurant experience?
Everyone in our class had some restaurant experience, mm-hmm. but I just had the most. And I'm the alpha asshole who's just kind of like, no, you're going to do this.
No wonder we get along. Yeah.
I feel like there's a thread going through this table.
Yeah.
And then I started working restaurants. I worked up at Harris Casino up in North County and loved it and hated it at the same time. They took advantage of the front of the house management that I had. Mm-hmm. So I would put on my whites every day and show up to work, and then they would parade me around to go talk to high rollers' wives and everybody and like, you know, what can I get you today that you don't see already?
Gotcha.
And then I ended up taking a line cook job down here, actually 2 blocks over at Confidential when it was still here on 4th and E.
I think that's when I met you.
Yeah.
I was down there.
Yeah, I was there and worked my way up from like pantry cook all the way, worked my way all the way up to executive chef. And in the 6 months before I became executive chef, that was actually when I went and did that really little reality show that nobody ever talks about, mm-hmm. Top Chef. Which I didn't win, so I had to go scampering back to my job. And thankfully, it was still there for me. And then I stayed there for about almost a year after the show, and then went off and spent a year working on what I wanted to do and opened up my own place, and that was Our Gang Eatery, mm-hmm. Which I just closed after 5 years. I just shut it down last May,
yep.
Which was bittersweet. It was great to have had the experience and a bummer to lose it, but great to actually be able to take a step back and really refocus on the food side of things. I was getting lost in the operation because I was trying to do everything myself, and I got really lost in the process, and now I get to focus on the food. And Waypoint's doing awesome. We're actually going to open up one, if not two more locations this year. So
that's terrific.
I'm excited for it. Yeah, so I get all of the excitement of owning my own place, but I get to go and take time off. So it's nice now. It's a nice little
thing. Wow.
Although I got to tell you, that last night at your place was a lot of fun.
Yes, yes.
And thank you for having us.
That was a lot of fun.
I remember most of it.
it's a little foggy, but
when
that
we didn't
night
want to leave
good.
Any product for the new owners, we were more than happy to oblige.
Just keep drinking.
Well, you know, I thought Our Gang was just a great idea, and if nothing else, you can take away that we're sitting in the gas lamp where things are opening and closing daily after a 4-month run, after a 3-month run. You lasted 5 years.
Yeah, and it was a good, solid 5 years.
A lot of it was on a wing and a prayer when things weren't great, and you did what you could when things were rolling.
Exactly. But you roll with the great times, and during the crappy times, you got to scrap it together and figure out how to make it work. And, you know, I was super fortunate that I had a lot of great people in my life to help me out, two of which are included sitting at the table right now, you know, to help me get through and get by. And it's like you said before, Honest, you know, when you're at your lowest, you need your friends to help pick you up and keep you going. And, you know, I had some great times and some times where I just wanted to throw in the towel. And I was just really fortunate that I had people to help me out and have my back and keep kicking me in the balls, telling me to keep going, keep going, keep going.
Well, you know, I think that everybody benefits really, in, especially in this business, from the lean times. You know, the old phrase in our business is that volume cures all ills. when you don't have a lot of money rolling in, you have to be a better chef. You have to manage your purchasing better. You have to manage your waste better. Honest doesn't know anything about that because he's been a success from, you know, the get-go. But I can also remember when you guys were trying to get open, you basically sold off just about everything that you own.
Yeah, right? No, that's true. Now it's people throw it at you. It's just, right. And it's sad. I mean, that'd be one thing if we could change is that, you know, giving that opportunity to people, you know, and I guess that's the risk, you know, that we had the experience, but yet we had no history. You know.
Both of you guys, though, have a long history of giving back to the culinary community, for sure. Seems like every guy that, as soon as they get canned from their gig, ends up working for Hannah's for a little while. you know, you never know who you're going to run into out there at the pig pen. I spent time in your kitchen when I didn't have a gig, Rich. And it's one of those things. It's cool to be part of that kind of community.
We look out for each other. You know, when you everything from somebody who's really solid that you know works somewhere else gets let go, and you try to hook him up with the job, to me incessantly calling Hannes, going, "My fryer went down. I need to borrow one, please. Can I come by and pick one up?
My walk-in's down. Can I bring stuff to the hotel?"
That only happened a few dozen times.
But, you know, and let's talk about that. Why, you guys have worked in other cities. Why is the relationship so busted? Is just the natural competitiveness? Because we have kind of a core group of guys, and there's a couple different core groups of guys that just do a bunch of things together. When I was talking about last night, that group, I said it's nice getting the band back together. Because between the three of us, that was probably our eighth beer dinner that we've all done together.
I think so. Yeah, it's definitely.
I mean, I know you two are my first two phone calls every time I want to do one of these. Why do you think that some of the communities are busted?
Well, also I think a lot of it is where I guess we come from, like Rich and I, the owner, you're a property that could do it. Mm-hmm. That there's so many owners that hold on so tight that I don't think they allow their staff that maybe want to do it the ability to go and do it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it's maybe it is a competitive part that I don't want to share my chef, but all they're doing, that chef can learn. Like last night, I saw a cool thing you did. It didn't work out. But you know what? Just seeing that alone
gives you ideas. Right.
Seeing how your guys set up the line. I like their little things. You know, if you can't learn at each of event, then you shouldn't even be doing them. But I do learn at them all.
Right.
And I think that's what people don't realize is that, look, yes, that might have cost a restaurant $100 with the product and the chef leaving. But what did they get done? What did they learn? You know, they're meeting people. Like you said, you call us. And then we call others. And to just be with that group last night was, I mean, that was one of the best tasting meals I've had in a long time. Like, it worked.
The Stone rep who was here with us last night said that it was one of the better Stone pairing dinners he's ever been to.
Nice.
And I think that's great. It, you know, and the other thing I really like about it is that we're all chefs, but there are no chefs. We help each other plate. We talk shit to each other. We, you know, there's nobody's feelings get hurt. It's just a good night. And I don't think we in the industry do that enough. I don't think we just hang out together enough. We're all so busy. We all, you know, you're married. Hannes is married. I'm married. You spend so much time in your restaurants that you have to parcel out your leisure time, you know, in little bits and little fits and spurts, to where you really don't get to socialize with people in your profession.
I mean, thank God for things like this.
Yeah.
You know, because that's really, I don't know how much I've seen you guys out if it's not at one of these.
If it's not at one of these or at one of our places, then it's few and far between where we get to just run into each other.
True. Yeah, just
unless it's Restaurant Depot.
I was gonna say unless we used to see each other there all the time.
Just smacked my cart? Hanging out. I probably haven't hung out with you guys in 6 months, and you two are probably my two best friends in the San Diego culinary community. It's just kind of the way it is, and it's all understood. Nobody's feelings get hurt about it, but it's nice to be able to do that.
Yeah, and we take advantage of it when we can.
Oh yeah,
and that's why I think it's important to do these deals.
We get a good time for everybody to get to hang out and cook together and just have a blast. And it's fun to, you know, get to kind of blow off a little bit of steam, not be stuck in service at the restaurant.
Amen on that.
Well, and on that note, we are drinking today. We are drinking Jameson Black Barrel Select Reserve. So, boys, thank you for being here. Cheers.
Cheers.
Maddie.
I got a long reach. There we go.
Ooh, that's
delicious.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't suck.
Why is Rich getting prettier all of a sudden?
Crack open that bottle.
Hey, I want to move to something that's kind of near and dear to your heart, and I really want to get your thoughts on it. Both of you have done...
Beer is near and dear to both of our hearts.
Yes, it is.
Both of you have done TV. Both of you come off very, very well on TV.
It was one episode of Cops. They dropped the charges.
But man, did those shorts look good on you that night?
Yeah, you know, it really just highlighted everything.
But here's my question. You guys spent a long time working in the industry, the nameless, faceless rabble in the back, until you actually got on TV. What do you think about what TV has done for the benefit and for the downside of our profession?
I think for the benefit of it, it gets people excited about food. You know, shows like Top Chef or, you know, if you want to look at some of the other TV competition shows that are out there, you know, it just gets people watching it and they get excited and makes people interested in food and different things. They see a different ingredient that they've never heard of before on any TV program, and it gets people excited about it. So when they see it in the store, they hear about it, they see it on one of our menus, they're not as intimidated by it because they have a point of reference. It's not everything's just totally Greek to them. The downside of it, though, is everybody who rolls out of culinary school with a knife in their hand thinks that, you know, they should be doing Tom Colicchio's job and, you know, getting $90,000 a year to work for 5 hours a day.
Yes, please.
Yeah, if only. You know, so it definitely it changes the entry level anticipation.
Do you think it's damaging the talent pool? I mean, one could argue that because of the popularity of, we are at a very, very popular time. Chefs are celebrities, and it's not just a trade anymore, so there's probably more people going to culinary school than ever, but there's an expectation, apparently, when they come out. Is it damaging? Is it giving the talent pool unrealistic expectations?
I think so. I mean, the problem is, culinary school, $60,000 to $70,000. That's a lot of money for our industry.
Yeah, that's a lot of peeling onions.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys. It took a long time. I mean, I'm not even really at that yet. I mean, yes, I'm an owner, so I have perks, but I don't get a check for $70,000 a year.
Right.
So how is it that I could, as an owner, even afford school? So here you got 18 to 20-year-olds going that deep in debt in an industry that is so competitive with pricing on the menus, you know, rent, insurance, you know, I don't want to sound like a whiny owner, but
our margins are razor thin.
That people don't understand.
It is a fact and of our existence.
You have these kids that, you know, want to do that, but don't realize you start out at minimum wage out of school. Yeah. It's not, you have to earn the ranks. I think kind of you had mentioned that. You have to grow up. You know, you start as a prep, right? You start, then you go to pantry, and you go up it. And these guys want to come out and be at the top. But all of us started, you know, I mean, I started doing dishes because it was what I could get at no experience.
And it was money, and it was a job.
And it was your foot in the door. I mean, the jobs that I took in the beginning were, you know, like you just take something just to get there. And then once you're there, you bust your ass and you sit there and you make sure that you're constantly just working so that when an opportunity comes up, somebody else notices you're working your ass off and they go, all right, well, let's give this kid a shot. You know, and then that's how you just keep growing and developing yourself. I mean, I used to be that guy who allegedly, not to get anyone in trouble, you know, maybe came in early and maybe didn't, you know, only clocked in and out for 8 hours, you know, punched in and out for a break that I may or may not have taken. But it was never any expectation of, well, all I have to do is just show up and everything's going to be done. I'm just going to get to come in and make all these pretty plates. It was the, I need to bust my ass if I want to do well. And that's the only way I'm going to move up in this business. And I think now you get a lot of kids that come out of school or they just kind of walk into the scene. They just figure, well, I get to, you know, I went to culinary school, so I'm a sous chef now, right? And it's like, no, you're just going to be right over there peeling onions with that guy in the corner. And just, no, you don't get the right to talk to anybody yet. You're just going to stand over there.
And you're pretty white coat, of course.
Yeah, yeah. It's very pretty. And I love that you starched it. It brings out your eyes. But I'm just going to need you to stay the hell out of my way because right now you move too slow. You know, I think that's one of the things where some of the culinary schools, I have to say, like, not to toot their horn because that's where I went, but SDCI, that was one of the interview questions. When you sat down with Larry to do your final interview for the school, he sat there and looked at you. It was like, okay, so you're going to into an industry where you're taking on this much debt. You will make this much, or rather this little money. Is this what you want to do? Do not expect to graduate and walk in as a chef, as a sous chef. You know, don't expect to be clamoring all over TV. You know, you're going to struggle. Right. You're going to have a hard time paying your bills. This is a labor of love. And if this is not what you want, then this is not the business for you. And it's at the end of the day, it's true. But there's a lot of schools that look at the fact that culinary arts right now get a lot of focus on TV and they get a lot of play. And so they want to capitalize on that. And they'll just, anybody who wants to sign up, sure, go ahead and sign up for our program. We'll take your money. You may not get work after this, or you may, you know, they'll come in, they'll pass all the curriculum, but they may not pay attention to what's going on. If you don't learn anything in school, what the hell is the point?
Well, I think the it's funny that you mentioned what you did, because right out of culinary school, I was a sous chef.
I may or may not have been close to that myself.
Well, I was in the Air Force for 10 years. And when they interviewed me, they saw somebody who was a manager already. They had a decided lack of management in their kitchen, so they hired me as a sous chef. What they didn't take into account is that I didn't know shit. I could write a great schedule. And I can count shit on inventory. I don't know how to cook any of the shit that I'm counting, but and those, it was at the University Club of Washington, D.C. The nighttime staff, the average length of service for the nighttime staff was 19 years.
Wow.
Those fuckers ate me for lunch. they played dumb. They were like, well, you're the sous chef. Well, how do you want to cook it? I have really no idea. And it was, I started in management, and then I got out of there and accepted an executive chef position, which compounded the fact that I didn't know shit, because I was the only guy. I was then at the top level. I didn't even have anybody I could ask at that point. I had a few dishes under my belt, and I've always had a good sense of what goes together, an innate sense of doing that. But I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So I ended up taking a step back, worked for McCormick & Schmick for a chef named Tom Kranz, who has gotten out of the industry, who was kind of nurturing. He saw that I had a little bit of talent, and he didn't use it against me. He, you know, helped promote that talent, and that's really where I learned to become a chef. I didn't have the, but when I was sous chefing for him, I was just like you were as the cook. I'd come in and open, and I'd be there until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, because I knew I was behind the eight ball culinarily.
Yeah.
Most people are getting their feet wet in this business at 21 or 18 even. I was a military cop. The only thing that taught me how to do was drink and swear.
You do very well. Yeah,
which has served me well in this industry.
Well, I mean, you know, let's face it. That's a good chunk of the job as it is.
But it's one of those things where that actually helped me, because I knew I had to read more than everybody else. I had to actually be there and do more than everybody else because I was so far behind. And now that I, you know, sit astride my my six layer dip empire, it showed me really what you need to do to succeed. And I think that's another common thread between the three of us. Hannes is an owner and he's working a double this week. You frequently work doubles.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are shifts that are shorter than doubles.
Yeah, thank goodness.
I mean, I thought that only happened for hourly people. I looked at my sous chef. She was like, "So how do you know how to budget your day?" And I was like, "Yes. Just if you're on, I'm not going to tell you have to be here at noon. I'm just going to look at you and go, you're working tomorrow.
Right.
You come in when you think you need to be here."
Yeah.
And then on Monday, I was like, "I'm going to come in on my day off. You come in later." And she just looked at me like it was a trick. Like, is this some kind of test? What's happening? I'm like, no. Busted your ass all weekend. I'm going to come in on my day off, help you out. Like, just get some rest, come in later. And she still was just like, so, like 10 a.m., she sent me a text. Are you sure? Is everything okay?
Right.
Are you all right? And it's like, yeah, you're good. You're good. Take your time. Relax. Enjoy a little bit of downtime. Well, you won't get much of this in this industry, so enjoy it when you get it.
Well, I remember texting you on the day before New Year's Eve, and you were doing desserts at hour 17 of your day.
Yeah, yeah. Gotta love New Year's.
You have to stop doing desserts that only you can do.
Well,
yeah, that might be the first star, right?
Doing anything that just not only I can do. But, you know, I mean, I think we all have gotten caught in that.
There's something so specific
that you really want, and you feel like if you let somebody else do it, if it doesn't come out perfect, you're just going to want to lose your shit on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so inevitably, it's the, okay, I can stay here for 3 more hours and get it done and piss my husband off, or I can go home and just come in and be really pissed off tomorrow.
And the entire staff.
Yeah. Just pick up a bottle of booze and some flowers on the way home, and I'll be in, that's what I'm going to do. Hey, honey, I'm coming home late tonight.
Right. Well, that's another thing, though, about the TV side of it. Even on the shows that people are actively cooking and actively throwing down, Top Chef, Knife Fight, if you guys don't watch that. I love Knife Fight. That's an hour at a clip. I think that people, I have to work hard for part of my day, and you know, I working for McCormick and Schmick, I went to the Baltimore Inner Harbor one for an 800 cover dinner. that is getting continuously dick punched for 5.5 hours straight. I don't think that it's not framed well on TV. They just how hard it actually is.
No, and even when you had shows like back in the day, one of the first, you know, reality restaurant shows, The Restaurant, you know, with Rocco Despirito, it still wasn't, it still wasn't an accurate, hey, this is what restaurant life is like. It was the, hey, we're going to make a reality show about a restaurant. Here's what we're doing.
Well, the problem is he was real pretty. Yeah. Well, they should have took an ugly guy and do it, you know. We don't have that, baby. We did go hook up in the dining room.
One of the warthogs sitting around his table, we would have been in the restaurant.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I don't have time to go do that. I mean, I had my mom working for me in the restaurant, but she was...
Do you remember that?
She was a different style of animal than Rocco's mom.
Jeez.
Oh. I mean, my mom's a beast in the kitchen. She'd be like moving kids. Like I had the kids work in the pantry, the ones right out of culinary school. And she'd be sitting there, "You're so cute. I'm so happy you're here working. Now get the fuck out of mama's way so I can show you how it's done." You know, yeah. On a Friday night, she's dropping tots and heels and a skirt, you know, and it's just like, okay. Yeah, that's my mom. No, we don't just call her mom. That's actually my mother.
Yeah.
And yes, I do yell at her when she makes a mistake. So if I'm going to do that to my mother, just imagine what I'm going to do to you.
I love Lou to death. Oh, and I call her mom as well. But mom is batshit crazy sometimes.
Oh, well, yeah. It's, now you
well,
know
that's why she still works
this.
In the kitchen.
So what's the future for the industry? I think that we are at, I don't know, I don't want to say an apex of dining, but there's less and less people cooking at home. But that also doesn't necessarily mean there's more and more people eating in restaurants. Is the take-home stuff at supermarkets, is that going to hurt us? Is it going to help us?
I think between the take-home stuff, but then also, what is it, like Blue Apron, like all those services where they send you, here's everything you need to make dinner for two, and it's only going to cost you, you know, $7 a person. You know, people are making it, and they're making these interesting dishes, but they're getting everything pre-prepped, pre-portioned.
Right.
And they're looking at it going, well, this only cost me, you know, $15 to make dinner for two people. Why should I spend $15 on one entree when I go out? And it gives people that unrealistic expectation of, well, what does it actually cost to do business? And most people don't realize in a restaurant, you're not just paying for your food, you're paying for all the staff, all the prep, the lights, the water, mm-hmm. the rent, the garbage, everything. Is all included in the price of your food. And I don't think people realize that. And I love that there are services that have people cooking more, and it gets people more excited about what right. they're doing. But I think it's starting to change the dynamic that people have with dining out, because they look at it as a, well, I can make this for less. And it's like, well, can you really make that for less? Or can you make whatever you right. get in your little box, you know, your little insulated cooler box that tells you step-by-step pretty instructions. Here's right. how you make X, Y, and Z, as opposed to I'm going to come up with this from scratch.
Yeah, you can get a piece of pork belly sent to you, but you can't. It's not going to be cured for 3 days like yeah, you do yours.
And then braised and then yeah, it's not seared and
yeah, it's not going to be braised right. and then pressed and then seared and
right. And I think you know maybe with the food like you know the molecular, we'll say you know the tweezers. You know, love you, Anthony.
Yeah, we were and, definitely descended on by the tweezer mafia last yeah. night.
I mean, you know, how many spoons do you need?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, and it wasn't the right spoon. Damn you, Carl. that it's going to get to a certain point where they're taking food to a level that's different and maybe us three and chefs appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But I don't see how the general public is as excited as we get. Like, oh, wow, they made an asparagus look like cotton candy. But really, if you want cotton candy, you want cotton candy. Right. You don't want an asparagus that looks like
right.
that. So I see it as maybe hitting its plateau and then going back to what people know, you know. As more of, you know, I hate to use the word crock pot because I'm scared the hell of a crock pot because I can't control the temperature. But that kind of thing where it's really thought out and basic.
Well, the three of us at this table are all comfort food guys. I mean, there's nothing – we do nice food, but we're not – it's not high-minded, you know. I look at a lot of the molecular stuff – it intrigues me because I don't know how to do a lot of it. And I think a lot of the stuff is cool. I don't see much application in the way that I cook. Are you guys kind of the same way?
Kind of the same. Yeah. I mean, I try to find ways of if I can use it in a way that's going to benefit the food that I'm making. Mm-hmm. So like the beignets that I did for the Food and Wine Festival right. a couple of years ago, that tied in molecular when I used, you know, like the...
Was it agar agar?
Why can I not think of... No. It was... why can I not think of the damn word right now? But when I turned the duck fat into a powder.
Right.
And, you know, that was taking that one little component and applying it across the board, but as opposed to, you know, sitting there going, okay, well, I'm going to use 20,000 different grams of each chemical and mix this with that. I mean, I use certain things, you know, like I use sodium citrate in my beer cheese sauce because it keeps it from breaking without me having to put in a ton of roux.
Right.
You know, and I want you to taste beer and I want you to taste cheese, and that helps me do that. So
weird.
so that's where I try to use it to my advantage, but it's not like I can sit there and make, you know, like tons of really cool. I'm not making the Alinea menu working at a waypoint going,
right,
here is your giant candy balloon that is filled with helium and tastes like caramel apple, you know, but it's a crystal clear little balloon. Please enjoy. Like, people who come in, I'm just going to have some kid walk up and punch the balloon and shatter it. You know, that's right, our kind of place. Call. Or my staff's going to be trying to take hits off the helium tank.
And right.
Let's be more honest than that. But but I like to try to find a way of incorporating it. But I don't know for the places like, you know, Analinea, where that's all they do. I mean, they focus on the fact that people will come out and that's a true dining experience. You're there for a few hours and that's what you're getting. You may not. I mean, I know a few people that have done those dinners and left and gotten a slice of pizza because they were still hungry afterwards. But it was a really cool experience.
And I know, Hannes, you're a fire and smoke kind of guy. So.
Yeah. Right, but that's until they
get an immersion circulator that can belch smoke into a bag, then I think we're safe.
Yeah, you know, and it comes down to, you know, maybe like the caveman days, you know, that's like the art of cooking, you know, where you're taking something from the field,
right,
you know, you're breaking it down, you're preparing it the way you should, you know, to best enjoy that product, you know, and I think that's worked well for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, and I think is, you know, and I agree, there's less and less people cooking, you know. It's like my mom doesn't even cook, but she cooked me meals my whole life.
Right.
Now she does the takeout or, you know, the prepared stuff. You know, now she's doing the Blue Apron, but, you know, I'm sure she buys that pre-cooked, the chicken that's sitting there in the grocery store. Because for her, that's four meals.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where we have to figure out where it's going. I mean, kids these days, you know, I mean, I guess thank God the millennials or whatever eat out because that's what's supporting us right now, you know. But how, what's that next step,
right? How's it, what are their kids gonna be after this?
That's really, I think, where we're going to see the biggest change, and what it is, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I wish there was some kind of crystal ball that we could all look at and know what's going to be coming next down the pike, but
right,
it's our industry changes so much day to day, you know, let alone trying to look at a trend and see. I mean, when the first of those food delivery services, you know, for you to cook yourself for starting, it was just like, okay, well, this is cute. And then all of a sudden, everybody and their brother jumped on the bandwagon.
Right.
And, you know, now with, like, takeaway services and delivery things where everybody and their, you know, pretty much now anything you want, you can get delivered to you, you know, pull up Uber on your phone and they probably got it.
Right.
You know, when you're trying to, but then that even still, I mean, I don't know too much about a lot of those deals, but a lot of times, you know, they're taking a cut of what you're selling, and we make such small margins as it is. You know, you've got a service that's coming in saying, well, I'll bring you business, but I'm going to take a cut of what you're making. If you're making 10 cents on something, now you're only making six, you know, mm-hmm. and you're only at 60% of what you were doing before.
Right.
So there's a lot to be seen.
We definitely weigh that out. We do a couple services, but luckily we're on the higher volume end, so we've been able to negotiate a little better. But it's definitely because they're, I mean, we have what? Like you said,
you mean not everybody wants to wait around the line, going around the block for some poutine?
Yeah, right? No, but you can, you know, you can log on your smartphone and have it there in 35 minutes. You know, it's also, I don't know, maybe that's a trend where people are working so hard to live that when they get home, they are exhausted. And that's where that delivery service works. In our delivery. I don't know. Shit.
I mean, I think that's cool. I think it's, you know, I've used some of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's awesome to be able to, because you're not just getting crappy takeout food. You know, you can pick the place you want to get it from and get really good food.
Right.
I'm just trying to figure out how is changing the way, you know, Danny Meyer changed over all of his restaurants from tipping to
everything's
included. You know, how is that as a dynamic going to change across the board as we move forward in the industry? You know, he was a big player
who it's hard to argue against Danny Meyer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and he did it. And as soon as he did it, you know, there was a whole bunch of other restaurant groups that chimed in and said, we're going to start doing the same thing as well. Some of them have done well with it, and some of them have reverted back to tipping because they realized this isn't working so well. So, you know, where's our industry going to go next?
One of the things that I do want to bring up on this podcast, and it's going to be kind of an ongoing theme with anybody, any of my guests, is as I've gotten older, I really tried to strike more of a balance with my life between profession and quality of life. When I took this job, I knew what it was going to entail, and I'm not working. The truth is, I'm not working 60 hours a week. Like that was my life for
Dick.
That, which was my life for a decade.
Since we've I've known you,
And how do you guys? You're both married. How do you guys strike balance? Okay, Rich, how do you strike balance? I know, honest, you don't strike balance.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of a moot point with you.
The balance is the fact that
say.
Sarah's sitting 10 feet away.
Yeah. Honey, this probably is shopping on Amazon, together. Right?
Look, we're spending time together.
We're spending time together. We're not in the restaurant. This counts, right? I mean, yeah, I with closing our gang down, it's I kind of took a swing the other way, and when I came on for Waypoint, you know,
swing the other way,
not that far, but I had the conversation with the ownership team where I said, like, I can work 7 days a week, you know, but I won't, you know, if something comes up or somebody's out sick or I have to fill in, then that's fine. I'll do whatever it takes to get the job
that
done.
Be the norm.
But that won't, you know, I don't want that to be my standard anymore. And that was really, for me, it was one of those things where I had to kind of say, this is what I want to do. And then just try to stick with it. I mean, as soon as I started at Waypoint, you know, it's like when you first start somewhere, you've got so much work to do. You're just constantly going uphill. And I've got my husband yelling at me like, you're doing the same thing again. It's like, yeah, but this is temporary. And now I've got weeks where, you know, it's like I come home at like 7 o'clock on a Tuesday or Wednesday. And he just looks at me and he's just like, wait a minute, why are you home already? Don't you have to be back at work? I was like, so wait a minute. Before you yelled at me, I worked too much. Now
and
I'm not
now
working
you're wondering
enough.
Why the hell I'm home.
Exactly. It's like, all you need to know is my boss is happy, the guests are happy, and I'm home. So just enjoy it.
Right.
So it's hard to find the good balance between the two, especially when you own your own place. I mean, there is no, well, I'm just not going to go in today. You know, you don't get a sick day when you own the place.
No. Well, you know, and when I was overseeing our gang for a little while, you were a consulting chef at another
didn't have enough to do.
Because why not? You know, if you're going to stay busy, you might as well be so busy you can't see straight.
I have to tell you, you look a heck of a lot better than you did. But you looked like hammered shit back then.
I was.
You were going
I was shit
all the
straight
time.
Out of the microwave. Yeah. I was just a steaming pile of nuked shit.
Yeah.
And now I laugh when people come into the restaurant who I haven't seen in a few months, and they just look, they're like, you actually look good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to know what you thought I looked like before. I mean, I know I look like crap. But, I mean, I'm fortunate. I've got a really solid team in place. I've got a solid sous chef, and I signed on with a company that's growing, and part of my role is coming in. It's not necessarily – I don't have to be in the restaurant every day of the week.
Right.
Something goes wrong, I still get the phone call. But I don't have to be there every day of the week. My job is to develop my staff to the point where they can be the ones who run things. So my sous chef, you know, as we had our staff party a couple of weeks ago, and as soon as – you know, I told her, I said, all right, so we're now in 2016. We're opening up one, if not two more restaurants this year. So – it's no longer the, hey, I'm Chef Rich, I'm going to micromanage the staff and watch and make sure everything gets done. Now something's not done, I'm putting it on you.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go up to Susie the line cook and say, like, hey, you didn't wrap up your station last night. If I walk in, it's not done. I don't care if it's your day off. You're getting a phone call.
Right.
And she very quickly found every Monday morning I was coming in and leaving her a little love note of, like, here's everything that wasn't done, which I'm now using as a tool for her to develop the rest of the staff so that she can see what they aren't doing, but also so that she can see this is the shit you have to look for when you're running the kitchen.
Well, it's always incumbent upon us to try to train our staffs to make us obsolete.
Yeah.
It really is.
When I started, that was it. The chef told me, you know, you're not succeeding unless you're after my job.
Right.
And that's how it is. And that's how it should be.
That's an interview question.
Right?
Do you want my job? No? Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Correct.
You know, you want my job? Cool. Second interview.
Yeah. Right.
But I think that's part of the school thing is they want their your job without earning it, I guess. And that's I think the balance is how do you find those people that do it, you know, and able to.
How do you find balance, especially with opening another restaurant?
It's taken a long time, I'll be honest.
Because your lovely wife, Sarah, is also your business partner.
True.
Your restaurant doesn't ever go away.
True, but I think on what Rich said is it's up to me to develop people so I don't have to be there. And like you said, trust me, when I go in and it's not right, you're right. I don't go to the cook. I go to the guy that I put there. And unfortunately, I had to let someone go that had been with me for a lot of years because he wasn't able to do it.
Right.
You know, and the new kid that's there, it makes me sleep better at night, I'll be honest. You know, and it stinks because you have to make aggressive changes, but that's the only way you're ever going to find it.
Sure.
Because trust me, I could be there every day doing all this stuff. And is that really good for me? Is it good for them? Probably not. They kind of probably like it when I'm not there. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's about development and trusting. And I think that's a hard, big issue with chefs.
Most guys have trust issues when it comes to our staff. Because you get burned and then... Once somebody and we've all been
burned.
Over,
that's it. It's not like, oh, I might get burned. No. We've been burned multiple times. And as our growth, you know, again, you brought up our age. You know, we didn't, nobody handed us our jobs. You know, I used to get in trouble. I used to go in so early and not punch in. But that's how I learned how to break down fish and meat, you know, and how to bake. You know, not that I really do it, but, you know, somebody has to teach you. You're not going to open a book or watch Chopped and go, oh, I can do that now. You got to, you know, screw things up a couple times to get to that spot.
You have to be there when the work is being done. And if you're on nights, you don't see what the prep cooks do all day unless you're there. And you have to be there when it's going on.
You know, and then also, you know, luckily Sarah taught me about, you know, nice hotel rooms and massages, you know, so I kind of got a little hooked on it. So, you know, it's a little easier to get me away now. They have the sheets. You like, okay, I'll take 2 days off.
You know, one thing I've always noticed.
I think she's booking a room right now, actually.
One thing I've noticed about all chefs, though, is that we have, we're creative people. And do you guys have any other creative outlets other than food?
Wow.
I mean, apart from occasional loud drunkenness, which both of you do magnificently.
Yeah, right. Thank you. I'll try.
I mean, I guess I've found ways to, like, relax, and that's really what has to happen. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's where I've put my creative is, how can I make myself be more comfortable, forget for whatever it is, 1 hour, 2 hours,
right.
Stop thinking. You know, for me, it's a motorcycle. You know, as dangerous as it is, it's the only time where there is absolutely zero contact with me. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're sitting here together. I know all of our phones are buzzing. We're all trying not to look because that's how it is every day for us. And that's okay. But when we leave, it's you have to find it. You know, some people find it in painting or whatever. I find it by disconnecting, I guess.
Right.
You know, I've been trying to do it by blacking out. It doesn't work. So.
Rich?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, mine's just kind of the same thing. It's like taking that creativity and just trying to find a creative way to turn work off. Mm-hmm. You know, and I laugh. I have 2 dogs. Those are my kids. And I will straight up have an entire conversation with my dogs. Mm-hmm. Which my husband looks at me like, have you been drinking again? It's like, well, that's besides the point. It's not like the dog's answering me back. It's more so I'm just venting about my day. And
if I started arguing with them, then I'm really drinking.
She licks my face and lets me know that everything's going to be okay. And, you know, I give her a treat and then we go for a walk. So, I mean, I don't really have any other, like, insanely creative. I mean, like, my husband works for himself, so in my spare time, I help him with his stuff.
Right.
And, you know, that's just a different side of the creativity. It's more of how can I help
him with his program. Well, it's probably nice just to do something different.
Yeah, just to get a break.
Being here, I have a couple different creative outlets that, you know, as Hannes knows, I paint.
Which I do have two pieces hanging in the restaurant. Pieces.
And it's nice, and you guys are right. It's nice. That's my way of disconnecting. I don't have to think about food or staffing or schedules when I'm doing that. And I think that now that I hit 50 this past year and
damn.
Yeah, but quality of life matters to me. I could be making more money someplace other than here, I'm sure, but I have it good. I mean, I have the flexibility to plan dinners like we had last night, like to do events. I can do the fun stuff without having to give up a kidney to do that. And we've all been in that position where you go, you know, you have to ask somebody if you can go do something that ultimately will benefit the restaurant. And you shouldn't have to ask to have to do that. You shouldn't have to beg to be able to do that.
Correct.
That's what I got to say. I'm super fortunate now. I mean, John, the owner over at Waypoint, kind of looks at me like, well, you've been an owner. You know what the hell you're doing. And, you know, when I ask him about, well, you know, I constantly go to him now. I'm like, well, what do you think about this? And he's just like, so do it. Like, I told him, well, I got a couple of events coming up. He was like, okay, so do them. Are you doing them as you, or are you doing them for the restaurant? I'm like, well, I'm a part of the restaurant, so I'm doing them representing the restaurant.
Sure.
It's like, well, as long as you're not losing me money, I don't give a damn. You know, like, just keep on doing what you're doing. And as long as you're happy and we're promoting things and we're growing, it's like
that. But see, that's when I went back to earlier. You know, there could be a better connection of all these chefs and cooks if everybody was like John.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and yeah, maybe his success has made it easier, but what did he do to get there? You know, and a lot of these owners, you know, and a lot of his, maybe Carl is going to the fact that you became a sous chef because they needed a manager.
Right.
When a lot of, I know, we'll call them chefs, which I have a hard time saying all the time, but they became chef because everybody else quit.
Yeah.
They were there the longest, so here you go.
So there could be 50% of the restaurants, at least for sure in the Gas Lamp, that have, we'll say, chefs that got there just due to longevity.
Yeah, outlasting everybody else.
Education, culinary knowledge, or
creativity.
Straight creativity.
Knowing how to balance everything, you know.
And a lot of people just, you know, and not that I don't like profit or bottom line.
Right.
But it's also, how is everything else falling into place? You know, and sometimes I think people forget that that has to be a part of it.
Sure, sure.
It's all part of the bigger picture. And if you only take one section of it, I mean, McDonald's is profitable. Doesn't mean that I want to go and be the chef over at one.
Right.
You know, like, it's...
Even though they have a chef-driven menu
they
now?
They do.
Yeah, come on
they
now.
They do. It's chef-driven, but you get to make your choices.
So it's drive-through-driven, technically.
I like it. Drive-through chef.
Here,
can we
cheers,
do
Rich.
Carl, that needs to be a
cheers,
dinner. Drive-through chef.
Well, fellas, this has been... I can't think of two people that I would rather have on the first episode of this. Matt and I are going to try to turn this into a thing.
Okay.
it's nothing right now, but it will hopefully be a thing. And again, just for the support and the friendship that you guys have shown me just over the years from back when I was at that unnamed hotel out in Mission Valley.
It's still there?
Yeah. When you guys didn't have to come down and support, but you did, and to the friendship that we have now, thank you guys for doing this. Loved having you on, and we'll definitely be calling you guys in the future.
Thank you.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah.
If you want to get everybody's website or Twitter address for anything going on.
Oh, yeah, why don't we do that?
What's up,
Honest?
That's why my wife's here, because
because Hannes is an involved owner.
Yeah. Hey, I know the special today, but our Twitter handle, nope. But I guess it's Carnita Snacks, and obviously CarnitaSnackShack.com for a website. I think our Facebook is Carnita Snacks, and we try to keep it up to date. You can see me.
You guys
loose.
Actually do a pretty good job of that.
You know, and you can see me on Junk Food Flip with my friend Carl over here. Minute 28,
minute
I believe.
28 is really when it gets exciting. The rest of the show is absolute garbage. But my Emmy will be coming shortly, I'm sure.
I like it. Nice.
Rich?
And so mine is, my personal one is at Chef Rich Sweeney, and that's on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And then at Waypoint Public is our the restaurant one,
okay.
Which is for our location in North Park, but we're always going to keep that one for everything else we got moving forward.
Nice.
Okay. For those of you who are tuning in, our Facebook page is Drinks with our Facebook address is Drinks with Chefs. And our Facebook page is actually Shot in a Beer. You can find us there. You can also find me at Chef Sunbear on Twitter. Guys, thank you so much. As we do the outro here, I think we'll probably pour another shot and call it a day.
Sounds like
here.
Last night I dreamt of flying over hillsides in the snow, and I drove down through the clouds to the valley there below. When the fields turned into parking lots, my freedom turned to dread. The ground rose up to greet me, and I jumped about a bit. You can fly, fly, fly off to anywhere you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you'll lose. It seems there's always something trying to bring a good man down.